That crew.
You gave him a copy without giving me a number.
I'm with him.
Here.
Wally Ballman.
Here.
Wally. This is Darby. Robert. Barry Brower. Mickey Moffett. Ellen Lowe. Talia Buckley. Donald Edwards. Martin West. Bill Hill. Bill Spence.
Here.
Bill here.
Are you here?
Thank you. Bob Yonkins.
Here.
Ken Amlin. Grace Hubbinski.
Grace has just been appointed, but is not, I don't believe is going to be able to make it.
Who?
Grace Hubbinski, and she is on the city council of Lincoln City, right?
Right.
Right. And as I understand, as of today, or as of your last call meeting, she's appointed to represent one of the cities.
We officially appointed her. Hog left this up there.
Approval of minutes of November 15, 74.
We can wait till tomorrow morning.
Treasurer's report.
Wednesday. Let's get into the uplands inventory review.
Okay, you'll recall at our last commission meeting, we had scheduled on the agenda a review of our uplands inventory, and due to a number of circumstances, we were not able to get to it, and therefore, we had to put off until this meeting a review of that particular inventory. Before we go into that inventory, I introduce the person who was in charge of the inventory. I'd like to introduce one other person in our midst this evening. And we have one of the staff members from the Office of Coastal Zone Management here from Rockville, Maryland. And this person is the Western States Coordinator, and I'm sure that we'll have some comments from him later on today or tomorrow. And I'd like to introduce Paul Pritchard. Paul, way back there. Paul is out from Rockville to visit the states of Washington and Oregon. And we'll be meeting with us this evening and with our executive committee tomorrow morning. With that, I'd like to introduce Dave Peterson. Dave, I believe you're here, aren't you?
Just signing in,
okay. Dave was the head consultant in charge of our uplands inventory from the firm Moreland & Smith. A copy of the uplands inventory, as you recall, was distributed prior to the last meeting. And Dave is going to give us a rundown of what's in the inventory and what it means, and application of it, etc.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Chairman, for those of us who inadvertently left our uplands report back when you have extra copies,
yes.
You can.
Yes, we need one too. Okay, Peter.
I thought that was pretty good report. Identifying
natural problem area known as multiple use, that is where the uses can conflict with one another.
You know, that way I've got to turn around and.
Correct.
And you are both there, that's cool.
Basically, this inventory in its various parts consists of the text, which you hopefully have all had a chance to look at, and the map, which none of you have seen unless you have looked at them up on the wall. They were not reproduced and distributed as a part of the review process because the sheer bulk and numbers of them precluded that possibility. We describe each of these three resources, and I will try to get the highlights of each of the three, and we have mapped each of the three. And as we proceed through this description, I'll try to refer from the text to the maps to give you a little clearer understanding of what the product is that you derived at. Basically, we've tried to be consistent in the organization of the report. In each of the resource chapters, we've organized nine specific tasks that we address. We defined the resource, we attempted to ascribe some values to each of the resources. We described some functions that can be attributed to the resources. And with respect to the functions, we want to emphasize throughout this study that we dealt solely with the natural functions as opposed to the economic or social functions of these resources. We inventoried the resources as completely as possible within the time constraints that we had. These inventories apply to the recreation, the agriculture, and the forestry. We prepared a classification or rating system for each of the three resource areas. We prefer to call this a classification system rather than a rating system. Maybe we got a little particular with respect to choice of word. Rating to us implied that we were describing some in-state use recommendations. In other words, a zoning map as such. Whereas a classification system is a bit more descriptive of the natural function that each of the resources possess. These zones or these differences of classification are designed primarily divide areas of equal suitability or capability rather than to assign relative importance. This is a very important point we think. We describe impacts from other uses, that is to say, other uses which might impact the forestry, recreational, or agricultural activity. We describe the preference of uses, probably not adequately, but we nonetheless attempted to describe to the classification system a preference of activities which we felt ought to prevail on the rated lands. We suggested management concepts for each of the three recreation areas. And finally, we rather exhaustively mapped recreation, forestry, and agricultural areas. For those of you who are familiar with the mapping system that has been developed for OCCDC, there are a series of nine maps at this scale, 1 inch to 62,500, which range from Flathead County up the north to Curry County in the south. We prepared a transparent overlay such as this for each of the three resource areas
two of which were applicable to the forestry section, which I'll get into in a moment. For a total of 36 maps, indigenous mapping effort. And this being the format, albeit unrecognizable for many distance, of the recreation mapping system, this being the format for the recreation or the agricultural system, and this for the forestry system. We went to some lengths to describe the limitations of the study and the particular pieces of information that we gathered within our time frame. I won't dwell on these, but rather get into the actual inventory itself. And I'll stand up here because the forestry inventory really breaks down into two map parts. The lands which are rated according to productivity and the lands which are identified by a classification system that was described in our scope of services initially. This classification system, as mapped, is as follows, class 1 through 5. Class 1 lands are those areas where resource protection, scenic, and research values preempt all other uses due to potential or existing ecological problems and aesthetic reasons. No timber harvesting are or will be permitted in these areas. We identified a number of class 1 areas, but I have to point out these class 1 areas are areas that were identified for us by federal land managers, the state forestry, the federal, the Siuslaw and Siskiyou National Forest personnel, who, by the way, gave us a tremendous amount of assistance in defending the whole state. The class 2 lands is identified on the map are those areas of which have a limited degree of timber harvesting permitted. They are further broken down on the map as being used for community water supply or high-use recreational activity. These, again, are classifications that are given to us for use in this study by public land managers. We did not make any value judgment because of the limitations of our information about which lands, or whether or not there are class 1 or class 2 lands from the private sector. We attempted to obtain this information and found that it was practically impossible to obtain it. The response, and I think it's a fair response from the private land managers, is that their lands should be classified uniformly as class 3. Those are the best suited for timber production. The additional justification for identifying class 3 timber lands are those lands which are capable of yielding more than 20 cubic feet of usable wood fiber per year. And intensive forestry management practices are presumed to exist or planned in these particular areas. Class 4 lands in our rating system are those areas best suited for timber production but not capable of growing 20 cubic feet of wood fiber a year. Basically, this is not commercial forest land. Class 5 is somewhat of a non-place specific. In other words, we're not able to draw boundaries around too many class 5 areas. But they are identifiable as rock quarries. We were not able to find any mineral or oil producing areas. But these are the type of land that are identified as class 5. There are a number of rock quarries which we did not choose to identify as class 5, but rather simply affix the letters R. The map that you see here, and I'll briefly describe it, and I hope that you have an opportunity to analyze this afterwards, is a map of the rating system in which the various classes that I just described are affixed to the map. Underneath is another overlay which are all, by the way, reproducible, which describes the ownership pattern and basically differentiates between the various classes of public land and does not identify private lands, except one can assume that all land is not so bordered by a particular legend is private land. This has the, in addition to the ownership information, the site productivity information that is referred to in the text. The site productivity information came from a 1946 study, which in our opinion was the best piece of information, the best source of information for use in a region-wide study such as this. Basically, the 1946 potential productivity study identified different classes of land based on their natural productivity for growing timber. For example, site 1 land, as identified on the maps, are capable of growing 194.5 cubic feet of wood fiber per year or more. And this is without intensive management applied to these lands. We have identified the 4 classes of productivity, and the 5th being non-commercial forest areas. This is map and the principal finding, which one would expect to get, and does in fact see if we were to array all of the maps together in the spring from north to south, is that the potential productivity of the forest lands in the north coast is a good deal greater than the potential productivity of the lands in the south coast. We describe some results of the classification system, and there were no substantial earth-shaking findings in this. We didn't expect to. We did identify as class 1 lands, class 1 forest lands, that is those lands in which no timber harvesting activity will occur, 1 wilderness area, 8 natural areas, some damageable or fragile areas on BLM lands, and some scenic land on the Siskiyou National Forest and BLM lands. Also, 2 proposed wilderness areas have been shown, Cummins Creek area and the Soyuzla National Forest, and in addition to the Kaliopsis wilderness area in the Siskiyou National Forest. With respect to the class 2 lands, the principal findings are that we identified a number of areas where limited timber harvesting could occur, or by definition, from the public land managers should occur, because of either scenic or recreational activities being designated as having a degree of importance in those lands. With respect to the management concepts in the draft report, we have suggested some limited amount of attention be given to the Oregon Forest Practices Act. We have received some comments from members of the timber industry, which we have acknowledged and taken some criticism with respect to the limitations of the management policies and have acknowledged these limitations and have added that basically the policies of the state should be redirected toward incentive programs for the purposes of improving land capability. We have, by way of the review process, a number of comments coming from other segments of the people who have reviewed it. and we are making these changes as we receive them. That's basically the gist of the forestry section. The agricultural section, which is by far the easiest of all to describe because of its simplicity in terms of mapping, can be described in very few words. It was an activity which formerly enjoyed a great deal of importance on the Oregon coast, and we have documented its decline over time to the reduction of farms occupied by the census. We described a process for identifying a rating system or a classification system for agricultural lands as contained in the draft, and have rated lands again on a 1 through 5 capability basis. We have said, in effect, that prime agricultural lands have a series of characteristics, and that unique agricultural lands have a different set of characteristics, and have rated these lands accordingly. Class 1 lands, as with the forestry system, have the highest potential and suitability for agricultural production, whereas Class 5 have little, if any, capability for agricultural production. We, in the agricultural section, describe the situation on a county-by-county basis, which we did not do with the other two resource areas. We felt that agriculture being an activity which has had a historical importance in a number of individual counties was best described on that county basis, and that it would be difficult to generalize agriculture and all of its ramifications on a coastwide basis. We rather strongly suggested in the management policy consideration the retention of agricultural lands, preservation of agricultural lands for a variety of purposes. We explicitly avoided the economic growth, although we did make a number of comments about the decline. I think suggested quite strongly that agriculture has values other than economic. With respect to the recreation resource, the mapping format which you see on the far right, we prepared, in addition to what you have in the inventory draft and what you see on the map, a 70-page listing of each of the recreation features, together with the acreage and the type of activity, be it public or private, and be it for fee or for free, for the entire coast. That inventory was not difficult to provide to, but it is of considerable value in our judgment in looking at the entire recreation picture. All that is identified on the additional 70 pages is mapped in the series of maps as well. We, like the other two resource areas, identified the classified the number one recreation areas as having the greatest importance on a regional or statewide basis, descending to the classified areas with a little to any recreational utility. We have identified some of the unique features of the coastal zone for recreation, and that in our judgment there are some significant functions within the coastal zone for recreation activity. If any of you were following me in the draft, page 48, we have identified the inventory, methodology for describing all of the types of activities by the provider. The provider is identified as coming from either the public sector, which might be county, state, the various classes and state functions, like state parks, state forests, and so forth, federal providers, and within the private sector, the user fee, which accounts for the parks, amusement park, campgrounds, sports, marinas, picnic areas, and so forth, and the fee simple component of recreation, which deals with the second home subdivisions and condominiums. The location and extent of the resource is described with the 1, 2, and 3 areas, that is the 3 highest classifications, outlined in a pattern with the 2 lesser significant areas identified and just numerically with the line of. As I mentioned, this inventory is an exceedingly difficult report to present in any kind of intelligible way. And Mr. Acting Chairman, I believe at this point in time I would respond to questions from members of the commission. I hope I haven't put you to sleep. And I had hoped that we would have had a little better show with respect to the recreation component. I would like to clarify any comments about the product, though, if that appears in order to start.
Well, one question I have, it seems to me in the recreation resource and the agriculture resource classification, if we were to make kind of a blanket statement, class 1 would be the thing you would not want to disturb. In other words, leave in its current state, more or less. Through class 5, which could be easily changed from agriculture or recreational use because there are other places where there would be better site for that. But the forestry one seems to me kind of backwards, unless I'm not understanding exactly what you're doing, but it seems to me that class 3 is that area that is most suited for timber production and therefore should be kept in that as opposed to being logged and put in subdivisions. But why do you not make that class 1? I mean, class 1 to me seems more like that is not to be logged, whereas a forest resource is something that you want to use for timber production. Or am I misunderstanding the use of the term forest resource?
No, I think that's a fair statement. I think, first of all, to answer why we rated them the way we did, that was part of our chart. The rating system was a given. Within certain constraints, we were to rate them according to this criteria. And class 1 lands were those lands which, according to the rating system we were given, were those lands in which no timber harvesting activity should occur because there were unique values ascribed to those areas.
But really, class 3 timberlands are a class 1 timber resource. I mean, in terms of what, if you make it parallel to the agricultural lease or recreational, it only is class 3 is really the same as class 1. Then the other resources, right? Or not? I mean, if you look at forest resources, the optimal productive timberlands.
I see your point, and I, to an extent, agree with you, but I guess. Peter's got his hand up back here, but there may have been some other considerations given to the way the rating system was designed initially. Peter, do you want to take a crack or further application?
Well, like Dave said, we did place on him that suggestive classification system, and we got away from rating because of that problem that you're identifying, Mariel, is that yes, class 3 timberland is really class 1 in comparison to other types of uses, non-timber uses, agriculture, recreation, urban development. And as you'll see, though, it needs some correction in the back when we start trying to make a comparison among those uses to identify where conflicts are going to arise. Class 3 forest land is treated as class 1 in comparison to those other uses. The problem we came up across was that there's so many different values in forest land. It's not just timber production, even though that may be considered the top value. There are also values of wildlife habitat, watershed protection, scenic features, and so on. And it became a problem on what are you going to rate first? Because if you have a land for timber production and you cut all the trees, then you certainly don't have, you probably don't have anyway, the values of scenic and some wildlife habitats and watershed protection.
This is why we were very careful in prefacing the report by saying that the classification system is not intended to be a rating system describing more than what it should be described.
I have a question there. You're talking about a class 1. Are you recommending for a class 1 more or less an area not to be logged at all, or no nursing return from out?
Well, we didn't know.
Who did?
This is a recommendation that we got, not a recommendation, it's stronger than that, it's a matter of public policy, that no timber harvesting activities occur in those public land areas that are so described on the map. Now, we have no class 1 areas in the forestry section that occur on private lands, for example. We have not imposed our value judgment about what should be class 1 land. That was given to us by the public land managers. And we only included those class 1 lands that occur on public lands.
Well, the only thing that was that just on the map, was everything south of Mescaline, where almost to Cascade Head, including Cascade Head, almost appears on both sides of the highway. These are in the number one class.
This is right where you're on this the forestry map, we can't see it.
Oh,
it's right on the border.
Oh, I don't know the map.
I'm sorry, it's around the corner.
Maybe I've got to take a look at that. You can see why I can't see it.
This is one of the class we can I don't believe there is any class 1 on this whole map.
This is all south of the
yes. These were just examples. Take the random.
But in the class 1 forest resource lands, and you said that you had included 2 proposed wilderness areas. The one was coming through, and I didn't know
the other one was an addition to the county office.
Okay, what about like Drift Creek in the Sanderson area?
If it wasn't identified for us by the public land manager, then we did not include it.
So you do not include the areas that are subject to the local standard routine evaluation and just those that they have designated from that rare system to the wilderness.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. If I understood you right, a few months ago you said you took a study that was made in 1946 to determine the land that is valuable for timber. For growing timber and things like that.
That's correct.
Well, in 1946, there was very little, I know this area, there was very little managed by any timber company or government agencies or anything. And I wonder, since that time, alder has come to be a valuable species of timber. In 1946, it was brush. In that study, if you took in 1946, they took in no consideration the value of it with journal line and motor.
No, the value of timber setting, I think you could still buy stuff for less than $5 a thousand those days.
Well, that's right. We got more local logs than we would those days for cult than we did
Tumble Burn, which for the first time is based out of the salvage operation in Tumble Burn, and that went on for clear up to about 12 years after 1946.
That's one of the limitations of using the productivity information because it applies to Douglas fir. Douglas fir being the predominant species. But the other limitation is that it doesn't account for variables that might be applied to the land by a land manager to increase the productivity, fertilizer, land management techniques, which all tend to increase the productivity. There are a number of those.
Very little planting, and they know it's very little. I doubt maybe there wasn't any. I don't know whether any timber companies were doing any planting at that time either.
We came to the conclusion there was no other source of information on a coast-wide basis that was as good as this 1946 data. Because it's 1946 data, I suppose there was a lot of concern about it being that old. Well, the basis for the study at that point in time was the capacity of the land to grow trees. Well, that, in our judgment, has not significantly changed since 1946. Wow. And we have quite a bit of expert opinion that has buttressed that point of view. To eliminate that source of information is to eliminate really the best source of productivity information that exists. There has been no comparable study made since 1946.
I assume your report then, as others, will identify these gaps of inventory information and recommend that additional studies be made. Is that right?
We have pointed out where additional study is needed and where our caution should be exercised when we use the business.
I looked at this before. I was wondering what and how do the classification designation show the existing use of any particular category that we're looking at? In other words, if we look at class one timber use, is this reflected in the recreational aspect of how much it's used? In other words, we could have a class one timber thing that's not used for anything. Maybe it's used very little for recreation. Is this going to be reflected? I know it's not reflected now, but what is the use of these classes to determine? How can we use these classes? That's what I want to know, to determine what we're going to do with this land and what it is we use for and what it will be used for.
Well, the recreation component, I think, is the best example of reflecting existing and public land managers, be they the state or federal agencies, view of what should be in recreation, because there is value judgments imposed in some of the recreation classification system.
Yeah, this
to a limited degree, and we pointed out it. But with the forestry section, we were somewhat overwhelmed by, obviously, the immensity of the task in forestry. And we relied on information that exists already in the mapping and the classification system. So class one lands, again, we emphasize, may be a land which, a piece of land, which has been set aside by a federal or state forest management agency for whatever purposes, but primarily recreational. Now, we didn't try to say that this class one forest area, because it is a wilderness area, did or did not have a lot of use. We took others' opinion about that.
Sure, I have another question. Is Douglas fir the only species that you take into consideration?
Douglas fir is, yes.
Is the only species?
Yes, that is the basis of, well, that is not the only species, because certain high altitude species were identified.
And there are
some descriptions. To a degree, they were, yes.
got to be eliminated as far as the mortality. Really moved that about as much time-wise in Patrick Dillon County as we have in most places.
Well, the presumption versus the other species from the rural and equal proportion is food that was first.
Well, let's
won't hang out on the
upland area, but however, along the coastal area, the cross of the field, the hamlet would be the fastest.
That's where the process
goes. This is a matter of just timber productivity.
Yes,
timber productivity, no matter what. Wheat, we have a little barley, a little peat, a lot of productivity.
It may not be forested.
The productivity of the land, and it's being estimated.
That's right. There are areas that are not forested that are identified as being.
What I'm trying to get is that a lot of these lands will grow hemlock and spruce, it won't probably sort of let us forest.
Even lands that were in that natural state.
Now, that's right.
Especially in the coastal. Since 1946, mine's all started, but the whole coastline has been falling to a reasonable degree, and we planted that, and most of the replants will be kind of long for some time.
William, to the staff, to the top of everybody with the flag, Russell, I saw a question about us to portray potential productivity, and really conclude that information contained in the 46 study was the best because it was uniformly applied to the coastal zone. And no other piece of information was uniformly applied to the coastal zone. There were specific studies that dealt with portions, for example, state forestry lands. But unfortunately, they did not encompass any more than our own ownership.
Of course, when you're talking about state ownership, in several counties, you might be talking about.
It's a very significant amount.
Where you're talking about county lands being turned over to forestry for management. Tuttle County, and Placid County, and it's turned over a great deal of work back there.
We had wished that an opportunity existed to calculate the areas involved in the various classifications, but that almost is another study unto itself because of the size of the region and the various classifications involved.
One question I have in regard to the forest part of the inventory, I fail to find anywhere in it any recognition of diversification of trees in a given area versus unified production. And I gather that's partly because you weren't able to inventory the privately owned lands properly. I'm thinking about tree farming with a single crop cultivated in a tree farm. And also, as in the class one land, which you say will never be logged, as you've taken this classification from other sources, there would be natural diversification of trees within that area. That's one angle on this that you haven't been able to touch. Am I right on that?
That's right. It's not just the lack of data for private forest lands. There is no species or in-place species information on public lands as well. So we were not able to inventory what's growing where. In other words, not only because of lack of data in the private sector, but in the public sector as well. It may exist sporadically, but it does not exist uniformly, even in public lands. Spread, at least for us.
In other words, what you're talking about is a deal that you put in the air.
We were not able to identify in place forestry information. We were not able to say that within a class 5 area we've got 30,000 acres of Douglasburg, 5,000 acres of hemlock, and 2,000 acres of mixed peace. We were not able to do that in any uniform basis. The data does not exist.
Well, then, how would you say that various counties tax these lands? In other words, the state board of forestry is one of the most important inventory, and through the needle and severance tax is the way that we obtain some of that revenue.
That
the inventory is not completely available. They work on that. Sustaining yield, and they've done the cut per year, and this is supposed to be also different. The opposite is that from what the taxation department tells us, this stuff is up to date.
What?
We have inventory somewhere.
I'm sure that one could arrive at some reasonable estimates based on just that information.
Well, I hope so.
But that's very difficult information. That was very difficult.
Do the IRSA and high flight photographs enable you or someone in the future to identify species by looking at a photograph? We're still in that. All right, so we can tell hemlock and Douglasburg by photograph.
We investigated that as a possible source of information and spent some time analyzing those photographs. First place, at the point in time when we looked at them, they only went approximately 8 miles, 9 miles inland. So a significant portion of the uplands were limited. The other problem is that we were not able to make distinctions in species type. We were able to distinguish cut over areas, clipping areas, and that's really the best use of that. We could make some assumptions about age, but not species information. But we spent some time with
it. Was there an effort made to get the information that you needed concerning species from the State Department of Revenue?
From the State Department of Revenue? Yes, there was.
You couldn't get it?
Trying to recall the specific conversation that I had with them. They did not feel that within the time frame that we were operating, they could provide that on a supposed-wide basis.
Did you make an effort to contact the assessors in the coastal counties?
No, we did not.
Have any more questions on agriculture? I want to raise a question in the field of agriculture, but I don't want to
show we'll go to agriculture as soon as you I'd like to ask
this question. Now, these preliminary reports go out, and then we get public and industrial feedback and so forth. What happens is this material comes back in. How is it processed in order to go into this report, to modify it or to add to it and so forth?
Well, the exceptions of last meeting where we discussed some of the criticisms that we had in the movie, I don't really know how. Now, is Jim here?
Jim has received a lot of comments on his inventories. They had a pretty good response, primarily ones we were most interested in were these agencies that served as sources of information that they contact and dealt with. And the consultant is already in process revising the inventory where appropriate in light of these comments. Where he doesn't agree with them or feels that the inventory should be revised, we're responding to those people and telling them that point of view. I would say, generally, the comments have been very favorable. And they have suggested changes, and they've made a good many of them.
We've made about 95% of all the changes that have been suggested.
But they will do that. This is the normal process, is we do receive these comments back, and then the inventory is done and made up in its final form once these revisions are
It would occur to me that these comments that we get back on these are of significant importance, and that they shouldn't be dealt with lightly, because somebody that's knowledgeable has taken quite a bit of time to sit down and put their viewpoints in a pretty well-presented form. And I just want to be sure that we don't bypass that, because if we do, we send a document out that doesn't have all the authenticity that it should have. And you run, when the document comes on the floor for debate, why, you have these same people coming and saying, here is my point that this document doesn't consider. And so I don't think it's within the realm of this commission to sit down and analyze these inputs, because they're beyond my ability to analyze and interpret and so forth. But I want to make sure that people that we have working with us here that are knowledgeable on these things do give full consideration, so we come out with a factual, as near a factual and as near a balanced report as is feasible.
I would agree with you, Jim. I think that these discussions now and the different environmental trade associations and industries and whatnot, I think they should be
They should be taken verbatim. I just don't think that we should just take and say, well, put this in, because but I think it should be analyzed, and if they do have a point that has merit, it certainly ought to go into the report.
Mr. Chairman, in regard to that particular question Jim has raised here, could we ask someone on staff here, what determines the duplication and mailing to each member of the commission of letters of critical analysis of inventories like this? I gather that not all of them are sent, it's only part.
Wallace, a lot of the letters that we receive are general comments. They're not, specific criticisms of an approach or particular point, and therefore those are not mailed out. We send out quite a bit of material already. Also, all of the inventories are in draft stage. None of them have been printed as final reports yet. We're trying to keep that process as open as long as possible, because some of the inventories are still getting into people's hands for the first time, and they're calling up and wanting time to review them. So, if it became the interest of the commission to receive copies of that material, it would be a very simple matter to get it to you.
Well, I appreciated very much receiving the letter of comment on uplands, which came out, I guess, same time with the inventory. 3-4 pages.
Well, incidentally, in these last 2 weeks or so, we received letters from the Environmental Trade Association. They didn't come through the office here. They came right to the office of the environmental organizations in the Western area. Yeah. I mean, they weren't sent to me.
They were sent out with your mailing list to us without their going through your
Well, they're, because of the speed with which some of this is taking place, they have sent some things directly. Naturally, we made it plain that we will provide that service, but they're working to get comments ready prior to the commission meeting, so they go out to meetings. And there's some logistics problems.
Mr. Chairman, it would appear that there's one category of information that may somehow miss commission review, and that's that 5%. The 95% is incorporated into the documents as legitimate technical review and technical suggestions for corrections, we'll see it anyway. But what concerns me possibly is that there will be 1% of that 5 that we as a commission may feel worthy of more consideration. And what I'd like to know specifically, how difficult would it be to take the recommendations that come from the technical resources that are specifically rejected and submit those to the commission with the reasoning of the staff for rejection? Is that an overwhelmingly difficult task?
No, it's not difficult at all. First of all, on the policies, any recommendations we get for that, we want to print, either with the staff report that goes out or supplemental to be handed out on the day that you consider the policies. For the inventories, it hasn't appeared as an issue yet because those are not scheduled for final publication for some time, and we're acquiring a file of comments on each of those inventories. Now, it would be also not difficult. It would just be a matter of we have the capability to duplicate that and send it out. If the commission wants to receive those comments, and if you want us to draw a line between those we consider insignificant and those that we consider significant, we can do that also. Although